Welcome to Zenterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today with Stephen Amstutz, who's the Head of Strategy and Innovation at Xalient. We're going to talk about the impact of AI as we start to move from network monitoring to proactive observability. Stephen, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to tell us a bit about yourself and about Xalient?
So I've been with Xalient for just over 7 years. Xalient was a managed service provider specializing in SD-WAN. We formed at the time when applications and data were moving to cloud, users were moving to remote, and we set up to be our cloud-first company to enable that move. I've been working in networking for just over 30 years, also specializing in security as well. During the time I've been at Xalient, really seen networking and security converge. You cannot effectively manage one without managing the other as well.
When we look at the volumes of data that we're seeing across our networks, AI has seemed to be a really useful addition, purely and simply because we don't know how to analyze that amount of data from a human perspective. But one of the things that you look at as a company is it's not just good enough to observe data. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that shift from observing data to doing something with the data?
This has come along with the move to software-defined networking and the much finer granularity we can get from a network. Previously, you would have polled a device every 90 seconds or so, and you would have got an average of what was happening over that 90 seconds. That average was really not that useful. You didn't see bursty traffic. You really didn't get the granularity into what applications were consuming that bandwidth. With the advent of software-defined networking, we're able to get streaming telemetry from the devices. We're getting sub-second granularity from those devices. Not only are we getting utilization statistics, but we're also getting all of the metadata that goes along with that. So we know what applications are being used, consumed, and we know what users are consuming those applications. So we're able to much more effectively understand how the network is being used. And that's enabling us to have a far greater visibility of the utilization.
We all like to think we utilize our networks properly, but I've been around networking since the mid-1980s when we first started trying to do this stuff. I saw the rise of token ring and of dozens of different protocols. And one of the things we've always known is that we waste a lot of network traffic. How do you begin to determine, with what you're doing, the reality of each application so that you can shape that traffic? Is that being done by the AI, or is that information you feed back to the client?
Some of that is being done by the AI. What the AI is really good at doing is separating network flows so we can understand where the majority of the usage is coming from. It's a combination of that and really working closely with our customers and understanding what their critical applications are. We can then understand what flows are having the biggest impact on the network bandwidth, which of those flows are critical, and which of those need to be prioritized. You can always throw bandwidth at a problem. The applications will consume what bandwidth is there, so you'll just end up consuming that bandwidth, and you won't actually solve the issue of performance for the most critical applications. It's really about effectively managing that bandwidth. That's what our observability tools, alongside the functionality of SD-WAN, is able to do.
When we talk about observability, what are the key things that you're looking for?
It's things that are actionable. You can send thousands of alerts into a help desk, and they're just going to be ignored. There's no way, no matter how many people you throw at that help desk, they can consume those thousands of alerts a day. It's really about understanding the behavior of a network, knowing what normal looks like, to be able to spot those anomalies, only generating alerts on those anomalies, and making sure that not only are we delivering those alerts into the help desk, but we're going away and we're gathering as much context as we can about those alerts. We're doing as much correlation behind the scenes as we can, so that when we do deliver an alert into a help desk, it's already prepackaged with all of the information they need to be able to consume that alert and to be able to immediately go and do something about it. It's kind of the shift left mentality, not to use cheaper resource, but to avoid that resource having to then go and escalate to somebody that's able to log on to devices and be able to run commands on devices. If we can do that in the background automatically, then those first line guys are able to make intelligent decisions themselves, look at that data that's already been obtained, and make the right decisions to move to a speedier resolution.
Where are you building the context from? One of the challenges we have with a lot of AI ML systems is people think it's just about throw all the data at it and the system itself will determine the context. That's clearly not the case. There has to be training, there has to be intervention in order to let the system know this is the right context, this context isn't relevant to us. Do you spend a lot of time early on tuning the system per customer, or do the customers themselves, once you start to produce data, say to you, these are the apps that we're most interested in, these are the incidents that we're most interested in, so that you can build that context?
A little bit of both. We're not really tuning per customer, we're tuning per signal. The way that we consume latency would be different to the way we consume utilization, for example. And the way we learn what normal looks like and then generate anomalies is different between those signals. And that's just two examples of signals that we ingest. There's a lot more than those. When we look at utilization, you cannot do that without input from the customer. What's critical to one customer may not be critical to another customer. We really need to understand that application landscape. SD-WAN is brilliant at isolating the applications so that we can see them as different applications. But we then need input from the customer to understand what's important and what needs prioritization.
My experience of a lot of customers is that they think they know what their key applications are. The help desks look at what they get the calls on, and that then prioritizes applications in their mindset. When you actually start to look at the network, how much does that differ between the perception of what is used the most and the reality on the ground? Which, of course, will then shape the context and shape how the AI begins to behave.
That's a really good point. We're dealing with the enterprise support desk, which, as you rightly say, think they know what their users are doing. When we go to initially deploy an SD-WAN, one of the things we start with is a pilot. And in that pilot, we identify all of those applications. And the first workshop we have where we sit down with the customer is always a really interesting time when they start to see things that they didn't realize were on their network. When they start to see all of these legacy systems that they thought were retired long ago, but the parts of the business are really relying on, and you can't just switch them off. You have to continue to service those applications. So it's always an eye-opening experience for the customer when we sit down with them and go through their actual application usage.
I've done audits many times over the years of people's networks and discovered those old applications sitting there that we all thought we got rid of, but one small team is still using those applications. When you go to your customers and say, look, we found all of this, how often do you get the, wow, we need to move those users, or the networks and security teams going, that's what's causing the problem?
Pretty much every one of our customers on Cloud First Journey, where they want to move away from their legacy data centers and move as much as they possibly can into public cloud or to SaaS applications. That information that we gather when we're doing an SD-WAN pilot, which is very similar to the audits you're talking about, is often used to assist them on that journey. We always find these applications that, as you say, they thought were retired long ago, but are still being relied on. And you can't simply switch those applications off. It helps them to understand the size of the issue that they're having to deal with. From a security perspective, a lot of people now are concerned about east-west segmentation. So if one device on your network, whether it be a user or a server, is infiltrated, how do I stop that from spreading to other devices? A lot of security solutions will try to automatically impose that segmentation, only allowing sanctioned traffic to pass. But how do you define sanctioned traffic if you don't fully understand what your application landscape looks like? It's hugely important from a security perspective as well that you really understand that application landscape so that you can sanction what traffic's allowed to go between servers, or whether it's from servers to users. So it's really, really important.
There's another interesting point here to me, and that is we talk a lot about digital transformation, and SD-WAN has become part of that for a lot of organizations because of their move to the cloud. How much of a shock is it for them to realize that they've gone through maybe one or two phases of digital transformation, for them to think that they're now a cloud company, but actually they're still firmly rooted in that old legacy tech?
That is true for many of our customers. As I said earlier, they're all on a cloud first or have a cloud first policy. But the volumes of data they have, it's very difficult to move all of those applications as a big bang approach. It's a journey, and it's quite a long journey for the majority of our customers to be able to get all of that data across.
If I can go back to observability for a moment, it's very easy for us to throw issues at customers. We do it all the time, particularly from a security perspective. But you mentioned earlier making this something that they can act on, actionable intelligence, for example. Now, that's become a big buzzword in security, and one of the ways we're seeing that used effectively is not just saying to the customers, this is what we've seen, this is what the problem is, this is what you should do, but actually giving them a playbook by which they can do the tuning.
It depends on how deep we are in that customer's network. We do use playbooks a lot. I'll give you an example of actionable. A lot of managed service providers, when there's performance issues, the first thing they'll do is they'll go and look at utilization. If a circuit's being overutilized, they'll just bat the ball back to the customer and say, well, you're overutilizing the circuit. There's nothing wrong with it. Off you go. We're very much not about doing that. As I said during the introduction, our job is to make the enterprise IT departments look really good in front of their users. The only way we can do that is through partnership. What's the point of us saying you're overutilizing this circuit when we can go and gather context and say you're overutilizing this circuit and here's the top 10 flows at this particular moment. Look at flow number one. It's taking X percent of the bandwidth. Here's the user. Here's the application that they're connecting to. You might want to go and do something about that. That's for a customer where we don't have full control of their network to be able to put remediation actions in place. But where we can put remediation actions in place, we might alter QoS policies to throttle that one user to then increase the performance of everybody else that might be at that branch, because we don't really want one user affecting the many users that are sitting out in a particular branch.
From an SD-WAN perspective, where it can become just as complex as security, are customers asking you to break down that actionable into playbooks, or are they still happy with you saying, we've seen this issue, over to you to fix it? That also raises a question over finding illegal applications running. Somebody who's decided it's lunchtime, so they're going to stream some videos down and take it home because their home bandwidth isn't great. We've seen that many times over the years in corporate networks. When you start to look at the applications that people are using and the level of bandwidth, how much of a fine line is it to just be reporting back the bare bones rather than just throttling somebody? Because, of course, it's not your place to tell somebody what they should or should not be using.
It's a really good question. One of the main advantages of moving to SD-WAN is you get that local internet breakout. What that means is the SD-WAN appliance isn't just seeing all of the private traffic and managing all of the private traffic. It's also managing that local internet breakout. Quite often that's done with the cloud firewall, and that cloud firewall will have all of the policies determining what the user's allowed to do. Normally, it would be the customer that defines those policies and us that manages the deployment of those policies. As part of our managing of the network, as I said, if we see an overutilized circuit, we go and look at the top 10 flows and we determine that there is unsanctioned traffic that's creating that high utilization, then that's where we would go back to the customer and advise them that it's time to look at modifying those policies. Maybe not to block the traffic, but certainly to control the amount of traffic that is being consumed.
Network teams are notorious for wanting to own everything that goes on in terms of the infrastructure. When you start to engage with companies, how do you persuade network teams that what you're bringing is something that they can use, a benefit to them, rather than you replacing them?
You'll never be able to replace the teams. You're allowing them to do something that's more valuable. They don't want to be doing the repetitive work. First thing they do when they see an issue, they don't want to have to be logging onto devices and running commands and trying to find the root cause of issues. It's far better if we can automate that process, and then they're making the intelligent decisions as to which remedial action will I take and how will I redesign my network to avoid those issues from happening in the future. I see their role more as an evolutionary role where they're able to do the more valuable work.
Chatty apps are a nightmare on any network. As you look across all your customers, do you build your own database of the chattiest apps, the apps that you really don't want to necessarily see? And how do customers react when you say, we've spotted you're starting to use product X or product Y or product Z? Our experience is that they can get really chatty and become a problem. The customers say, great, thank you. Or do they go, we can manage that?
That's a really interesting question. You would think that the days of WAN optimization ended long ago and that applications are being engineered nowadays with the relevant mechanisms to avoid them being chatty. Unfortunately, that's not the case. We see WAN optimization as a very important part of SD-WAN, purely to remove that chattiness. In an ideal world, that would be handled by the application. The application would be engineered in a way that it makes best use of the bandwidth. Unfortunately, that's not the case. the legacy applications we talked about earlier are still prevalent on networks and still benefit from the techniques that WAN optimization can provide. But the newer applications, if they're badly engineered, have all of the same problems as yesterday and still benefit from the techniques of WAN optimization.
Bandwidth utilization is a bit like memory utilization, isn't it? The more you give people, the more they'll want. They don't actually look at it and think, how can I be better? It's how much more can I use?
Exactly. And also, people's needs have been increased. They want the applications to look pretty. They want them to be full of multimedia. That's putting extra pressure on the networks.
How do you turn this into being a proactive mechanism? Because it's one thing to be monitoring a network. It's one thing to apply a degree of filters, a degree of context, a degree of intelligence to what you see. But it's a very different thing to be predicting where bottlenecks are going to start to occur, especially as people evolve their networks and evolve their application landscape. Are customers asking now for much more predictive intelligence from you so that they can head things off before it starts, or are we still in the reactive phase?
No, we are definitely in the predictive phase. Let me start with the proactive piece. Our customers hate it when the first time they hear about a problem is when a user picks up a phone and tells them they're having performance issues. That really doesn't go down well, and that shouldn't be happening in today's landscape. We should be able to spot whether a user's having performance issues, whether that be because they've got digital experience management software on their end devices, or whether that be from the telemetry that's coming from the SD-WAN. We should be able to know what normal looks like. If there's an anomaly, we should be able to spot that and do something about it. That's the proactive piece. We really don't want to be finding out after the event that something's gone wrong and we have to do something about it. We should be already doing something about it, and we should be telling the users, we've noticed that your performance might be slightly degraded, but rest assured we're doing something about it and it will be back to full speed shortly. From a predictive perspective, an example of something that we're doing predictively is copper-based circuits can be affected by weather. And they can be rate adaptive, which means they'll change speed based on what they think is the highest speed that they can attain. For an SD-WAN to function correctly, it needs to know the bandwidth of its circuits. Because one of the things it does is if it's got multiple circuits, it will waterfall from one circuit to the next, and it will make that look like one nice bundled piece of bandwidth. We don't care what's happening behind the scenes. We just want to have as much bandwidth as possible available. If a circuit rate adapts and the bandwidth changes and we don't tell the SD-WAN the bandwidth changes, the first way that the SD-WAN will know that is when it starts getting packet loss. What we do is we use those weather changes, whether it be humidity or temperature, to predict what's going to happen to that copper-based circuit. We can alter the speed on the SD-WAN before that rate adaptation happens, therefore avoiding that packet loss to start with. That's just one example of predictive management that we're doing behind the scenes to stop a problem happening before it manifests.
How difficult is that to do? Because if you know where all your customers' endpoints are, and you've got one or two customers, it's relatively easy to get the weather expectation for that area. Once you start to deal with large numbers of customers who are spread worldwide, getting that weather information and knowing which of those circuits are copper, which of those circuits are not, which of those circuits are rural, which of those circuits are urban, is quite a complex problem. Are you pulling from multiple different sources to get this third-party data for weather and everything else?
Yes, we are. And that's a brilliant example of why you couldn't have humans doing this. You need to do this with AI. The sheer volumes of data that we're correlating to be able to do this are just too big for a human to do. Every appliance we have out there, we know the longitude and latitude, so we know its location. In each area, we have different weather sources. That's the kind of correlation that we're able to pull together to decide whether we expect to see any issues or not. Just because it's copper-based doesn't mean that it's rate-adaptive as well. It's typically the broadband-based circuits that are rate-adaptive and that are the ones that we need to adjust for. Each market has its own flavor of broadband. The way a broadband circuit works in Europe is completely different from a way a broadband circuit might work in the Americas, for example.
We hear a lot of talk about digital twins when we think about manufacturing and other systems. How far down the line are you for looking at a customer's network and building a digital twin of that network so that you can look at all of these changes, weather and everything else, but also begin to look at the age of equipment to provide information back to customers as to this could be a failure point. This is a single point by which all your traffic is going. If it fails, you fall over. Are customers asking for that, or are you down the line of building that?
Both. I talked earlier about gathering context. One of the systems we gather context from, and we have this in a couple of customers today, is one of those digital twin products that you talk about. It will ingest not just the configuration of a network, but also the state of a network. From that information, it's able to build a mathematical model of that network. With that information, we're able to build snapshots. Whether we do it once a day or multiple times a day, we know what the state of the network was at each time of the day. If we think from a correlation perspective, if I see an issue today that wasn't present yesterday, I look at all of my normal signals and I can't really find the cause of why that issue is there today. That's where I can start looking back in time at these snapshots from this digital twin and say, what route did that traffic take yesterday when everything was good? What route is that traffic taking today? Can I compare those two? And is that going to help me find the cause of the issue? It's a very important point of context for us to be able to go back in time.
How much are security teams engaging with that? Because we tend to think of this as being an operations issue when we think about digital twinning. But there's a very interesting security issue here when we talk about network traffic flows, because it may be that somebody is routing our traffic into an area where we don't want that type of traffic to be going. So are security teams asking more of you in terms of what's happening with the network traffic, where is it going, or are they still on the fringes of some of this?
The majority of our customers, not all of them, still have networking and security siloed. We tend to be the point where those two teams come together. The systems we have deployed for those customers are obviously sitting in both of those camps. We tend to deal quite regularly with both teams. We also tend to be adjudicator, if you like, between those two teams. We regularly deal with both of them. Coming back to the point of your question, though, with the digital twins, when we build a mathematical model of a network, we build that on multiple layers. We don't just stop at the IP layer. We're also looking at layer 4 and above, things like ACLs that are deployed to a network and changes to said ACLs. We're able to map that as well. When we talked about earlier where there might be a performance issue, the same really holds true for a security issue. If there was traffic that was flowing yesterday that's not flowing today, that could be down to an over-restrictive ACL, that's something we would spot in that digital twin.
When we talk about traffic, you mentioned IP there. Of course, our networks today are no longer just IP networks. We've got a vast amount of IoT traffic also traversing our network, using a range of protocols that the help desks often have no knowledge or experience of whatsoever, because those networks are managed by a separate team within the organization. How much is the explosion of IoT and the amount of data that it's throwing onto our networks, be that from security cameras, sensors in petrol pumps, things like this, how much of that is causing significant pressure on networks that requires a lot more understanding of a wider range of protocols and a wider range of how to tune traffic?
A lot of our customers are on a zero trust journey. If you look at the market, a lot of people will talk about the either or, either you do zero trust or you do SD-WAN. We definitely do not think that way. If you look at IoT devices, there's a great example of you still need to have a private network, and SD-WAN is currently the best flavor of a private network to be able to do that. Where I see the two coming together is network access control is a very important way to discover those and categorize those IoT devices. And integrating network access control with SD-WAN enables you to then segregate those different categories of IoT devices to be able to provide just the connectivity that they need. If you're able to build them into their own segments, you can then police what those segments are able to do. You can separate your users from your IoT devices. That's something that we're seeing very important now, that kind of merging of zero trust and SD-WAN through the use of things like network access control.
One of the things I do on all my podcasts is I put people on the spot. Imagine you're stood there in a room full of people who are trying to work out what they want to do with AI around their network. They don't just want to do some basic analytics. They want intelligence from it. What are the three things they need to think about when they're looking to choose a solution?
The first thing is the word AI is a great marketing term. Lots of solutions will say they do AI. But really, it's down to what are those solutions delivering? I don't really care how you're doing it, whether you're using AI, what flavor of machine learning you're doing behind the scenes. What I care about is what benefits are you delivering to me? What value is that AI giving me? If you're creating alerts, how many alerts are you creating? And how do I separate that from just the noise of what tools of today are already delivering? If you're getting hundreds of alerts a day, are you really going to look at those alerts? Are the alerts you're able to generate, are those anomalies you're able to spot, are they important or not? Or are they just going to become more noise? The second thing is, if you're going to generate an alert, how much context can you put to that alert so that I can make that alert actionable? I want to be able to do something with the information that you're providing me with. The third thing I would say is, how are you going to reduce the time to resolution? One of the things we do that I haven't spoken about yet, and this is something we're actively developing at the moment, is tying directly into carriers' portals using APIs. An example there is, we talked about playbooks a bit. An engineer following a playbook is one thing, but us automatically initiating a playbook is another thing completely. Let's say we got an anomaly. We looked at the anomaly and we saw it wasn't due to overutilization of a circuit. It was due to an actual issue with that circuit. We worked out, is that issue at the A end? So is it at the branch? Is it at the B end, the data center? Where is that issue? We've narrowed it down to an ISP issue. Rather than delivering that to an engineer and saying, go and raise a call with that carrier, why would we not use APIs and automatically raise that call with the carrier? That's an example of automatically initiating a playbook to drastically reduce the time to resolution, because you're not actually having to go through a human. You're automating that entire process. From spotting the anomaly to having a call already logged with a carrier is taking seconds.
How much do you expect to reduce the MTTR when you start an engagement with a client? Are we talking about a 10% reduction, a 50% reduction? What's your expectation once you start to work with a client?
We're looking for drastically more than 50% reduction. Obviously, it depends on the type of fault we're working at. Only a small number of faults are multi-day resolution faults. When they're going to a carrier and a carrier has to send somebody out to site and maybe they have to dig to find and resolve an issue, we're going to raise those calls quicker, but we can't really reduce the time it takes to fix those faults. We can just reduce the time it takes to identify them and get the right parties working on them. But the majority of faults are not that. The majority of faults are, even if we can't resolve them very quickly, we can certainly remediate them very quickly. We're looking to remediate within minutes.
I must admit, 35 years of playing around with networks, maybe a little more for me. And it's nice to finally see that we're getting somewhere about making sense of the amount of traffic we throw on the network rather than just making that pipe bigger. Stephen, thank you for talking with me this morning.
No problem. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.